It's 2:44. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. In this portion of the program, we're going to hear about the work of Rising Star Outreach and how ordinary yet extraordinary people here and abroad are coming together to make a difference with small individual financial contributions that add up, and also what are known as microloans. My guest is Becky Douglas. She's the founder and president of Rising Star Outreach. The story of Rising Star begins in the year 2000 when Douglas took a trip to India and saw the suffering of those afflicted with leprosy. The affliction went beyond the disease itself. In India, where some 1 million people have leprosy, there is a tremendous stigma attached to the disease. Becky Douglas felt she had to do something. And as the years went on, her efforts actually later inspired a young woman, a teenager, to do something in the wake of the tsunami that struck India and neighboring countries in December of 2004. And we're going to hear about that as well this afternoon. Becky Douglas, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Celeste. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, tell us about what you saw on that visit to India in 2000.
Well, I had actually gone to visit an orphanage, and when I was in my car, between my hotel and the orphanage is really when I was appalled. It seems like every time the car slowed down, these beggars would crawl up to the car, and they were missing limbs, and they had open wounds, and I just had never seen anything like it. And someone said, well, these are the people that have leprosy, and I was stunned. I didn't know there was leprosy in the world anymore. Mm-hmm. And I thought, good heavens, why doesn't somebody do something about this? And, you know, those, I guess, are famous last words for all of us. And so came home, couldn't sleep, couldn't get those images out of my mind, and finally thought, you know, I need to do something. So just called three friends over and dragged in my husband's secretary, and we formed this little charity, Rising Star Outreach, to address the needs of the leprosy affected in India.
Yeah. What was your objective early in the going?
You know, honestly, we had no idea what we were doing. We just knew we wanted to help. And so we started initially just doing humanitarian work. We would take rice and beans and saris and give some medical help to the people. But it didn't take us long to figure out that if we fed them today, we had to feed them tomorrow. And plus, their lives weren't very happy. We hungered to find a way to make their lives more meaningful. So then we happened to meet a lady who was doing some microlending in one of the colonies. Her name was Padma Venkatraman, and she was the daughter of a former president of India, an amazing woman. But we watched what she was doing and thought, oh, my gosh, this is exactly what we want to do. So we approached her. She had just run out of funding, and we needed a program, so it was a perfect match. And through her, we got started doing the microlending in the colonies, just very small loans for these people who were begging in the streets to get off the streets and start having a productive life. And so it worked. And we now have over 1,000 businesses flourishing in the colonies, and people that were formerly beggars are now supporting their families in really simple ways, but getting more and more sophisticated all the time. So it's been a fun journey.
Yeah. Now, the social discrimination that people with leprosy endure, is that changing then?
Well, you know, Celeste, that's huge.
Yeah.
Because in India, leprosy isn't really considered a disease. It's considered to be a curse of God. And the people are considered literally to be untouchable and defiled. And if they touch anything, then that thing is defiled. And so our challenge with the microlending was finding a market for all the things that they were making, that we were getting them to make. You know, who would buy them if they had been touched by a leprosy person? But, you know, bit by bit, gradually, we started first with getting them to sell to each other. And then bit by bit, we've now included the surrounding villages, and it's really caused an integration between the regular people and the untouchables. It's been quite a neat thing to see happening.
Yeah.
You know, there is a thing about begging. It reduces you to your worst self, because the worse you look, the more money you make begging. And so what we were seeing happening was the people trying to look horrible. And we, in fact, believe it or not, when our clinic first started We had a woman come to us once that had these unbelievably just horrible hands. They were swollen four times their size. They were cracked. They were bleeding. They were pussy. And our doctor said, oh, my goodness, we've got to fix these hands. And she withdrew them and said, no. She said, I put them in the fire every day.
Ugh.
I get more money begging. And so to take a person from that mindset to a place where they have dignity and self-respect, and then at that point they kind of want to look nice, and it just is a natural change that happens to them. And to see them going from that one sense of I have no meaning or no anything to look forward to I want to be the best that I can be is really quite a human journey, and it's fun to be a part of that. We have a little story we tell it. I mean, I just think so illustrates that. We have a guy, his name's Kopal. We gave him a $3 loan for to start a tea business. He bought a pot and two cups, and that was it, you know. But since then, his business has expanded, and we asked him once how his life is different now that he has this small business. And we thought he would say something like, well, I get to eat every day now. Or, you know, my kids get to go to school. But he didn't. He said, you know, when I used to beg in front of the store in the city, the shops, the shop owner would come out and curse at me and threaten me until I moved away. But he said, now I supply tea to that store. When I come now, the owner sets a seat and offers me tea. Mm. So to him, the biggest thing that was happening with having his own business was, all of a sudden, I'm a real person.
Mm.
I have dignity. I have respect. And that, to him, was more than being able to eat every day.
Mm.
So it's been an interesting thing to watch this journey with now literally thousands of people as they go from begging on the streets and having no self-esteem and no sense of who they are to where they're able to support their families. And, in fact, you know what? We even just have two cute micro businesses that have recently started. One is a barber shop for the leprosy affected, where they're, you know, wanting to clean up, and the other one, believe it or not, is a beauty shop in one of the colonies for the people that have leprosy. So, I mean, it just, I think, kind of shows that they really are truly changing to the core.
Yeah. Now let's talk about Lauren Prince.
Okay.
Because here's the beauty of this story. Here's another beautiful thing about the story is, she sees something that isn't right. She sees all these people affected by the tsunami of 2004, and she says, I got to do something.
She was amazing. Actually, she called me, her mother called, and she happened to be in the car with her mom the morning after the tsunami. And I was, of course, getting ready to head over to India. And she just said, what can we do? What can we do? And I said, well, I don't know. We think we're going to start initially with trying to help these kupams or fishing villages that have been wiped out get their boats replaced, get them some fishing nets, get them back on the sea so they can care for their own families. Seems like the whole world was rushing over there at that time with blankets and food and rice and cooking oil, but we just kind of felt like, well, let's sort of think of a longer-term cure. And they said, well, what would it take to put a village back on the sea again, a fishing village? And I said, well, we're not sure, but Padma's guessing if we can collect enough boats out of the trees and off the bridges and stuff where they've been deposited by the tsunami and fix a lot of them, that we might could even get a village back on the water for as little as $11,000. And Lauren was in the car and heard that, and she was mouthing to her mother, we can't do this. And she surely did. She went right home, called her headmaster of her school, said she wanted to do a PowerPoint when the school came. This was over the Christmas holiday.
Right.
And so she said, when we get back, I have a PowerPoint. I'd like to do an assembly. So she took pictures of the tsunami off the Internet, put it onto this PowerPoint, and they did have an assembly, and she presented this idea to them, and they were really captivated by this idea. The kids started out. She challenged them to raise $11,000. She found people in the community to match what they raised, and she made $11,000, and then it was $22,000, and then it was $44,000, and then it was $80,000, and I mean, it eventually ended up being over $100,000 from this one school. It's a pretty phenomenal story, actually.
Yeah, and apparently her efforts had other benefits. I mean, it's kind of a ripple effect. She inspired people to get involved in Potomac, Maryland, and then the story got out, and the inspiration continued. I have a news article about a California woman who got involved then.
It's amazing how that happens. I think a lot of us really want to make a difference in the world. We just don't know how. And if someone will step out and lead the way, there are many, many who have tender hearts that really care about their fellow man that are willing to jump in and follow. And I think that Lauren's example was a perfect example of this. Just a young high school girl that was touched by the plight of the people during the tsunami, did something about it. Others were impressed, and they just joined in. I mean, literally, the money just started pouring in from the community as well as from the school, and it was an amazing thing. Then, I mean, I don't know if you know this, but the headmaster and 13 students and teachers came to India over their spring break. By then, we had already purchased the boats and the motors and the nets and got this one village back on its feet, and we're working with several more down the coast, and they got to come visit them and see what their donations had done, and it was really empowering, I think, because it taught these high school kids that, dang, even they can change the world. Mm. You know, that even a high school kid can make a difference.
Yeah.
That's a great thing to learn when you're in high school. I wish we all had learned that back then.
Yeah, and I imagine it's put Lauren on a course in her life that maybe she didn't.
I think
she didn't, you know, see.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. She's become since then very involved in humanitarian efforts in Africa and other places. And I think once you see the power within you, then it's like intoxicating. You need to use it. You need to bless the lives of people. There's something that just feels so good about giving another person the opportunity to become who they ought to be. Mm. And I mean, it's all the time. Like we see in India, people begging that the rest of society thinks are trash. I mean, they're just throwaways. But the truth is, if you give them an opportunity, they can be just as talented, just as productive, just as successful as the next person. And so I think once you realize that, it empowers you to go forth and do more, you know?
Yeah. Becky, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
Well, thanks for this opportunity.
You're very welcome. Becky Douglas is the founder and the president of Rising Star Outreach. The work of Rising Star Outreach, it is bringing together ordinary yet extraordinary people here and abroad and making a difference with small individual financial contributions and what are known as microloans.